The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by Alumni Ventures. Invest with confidence. Discover the power of venture investing with Alumni Ventures, America's largest venture firm for individual investors. Learn more at av.vc.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to another exciting episode of Negotiate Anything. Negotiate Anything is produced by the American Negotiation Institute, and with over 3 million downloads and listeners in over 180 countries, listeners just like you have made it the number one negotiation podcast in the world. I'm Kwame Christian, and I'm the director of the American Negotiation Institute. We're growing, and I want to introduce you to our new team members and new trainers. This will give you new and diverse perspectives on negotiation and conflict resolution. And that's why Shane Martin, our head of sales and partnerships, is going to serve as co-host of the show from time to time. We're excited to continue to provide you with the best content that will help to make your difficult conversations easier, both at work and at home. Lastly, our team conducts negotiation and conflict resolution trainings in the United States and abroad. Our trainings will give you the practical skills you need to resolve conflict, negotiate, lead, and persuade with confidence. Click the link in the description below to learn more about how we can make your difficult conversations easier. Athol, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm really looking forward to the conversation.
Yes, likewise, my friend. I think it's very timely. So how about you get us started by telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, my professional life has been probably in three different acts, I think. Act one, I worked with the BBC as a journalist and an executive on the news side, mainly on the television news side, for quite a long time. Act two, I worked in various businesses as a change leader, as a director, transformation change leader. And then now in Act 3, hopefully not my final act, I sit on some boards as an advisor, but I'm also an executive coach. And, you know, I live and breathe how we're more effective as leaders in the corporate world. And wow, don't we face some challenges now as we hopefully come out of COVID and come out of lockdown, and the whole world of leadership and the whole world of work has been turned upside down.
Absolutely. And you have a book that speaks to that too, right?
Yeah. So take you way back to March 2020 when the pandemic began, and we decided in one of the businesses I work in, Black Isle Group, we decided to set off on a project called Leaders in Lockdown. It ended up in this book. So we followed 28 global business leaders through the pandemic, trying to find out, get insights into their leadership. You know, how did they survive? How did they help their businesses to survive? But probably the more relevant bit of it now is their insights into how the world will change because of what we've all been through. And that morphed into workshops that we've been doing all around the world with teams, trying to help them lead out of lockdown, how to come to terms with the many challenges that we now face in this next period, challenges that are different from what we've just been through, but no less difficult to solve. Wow. So hybrid working, remote working, how to be effective, how to lead remote teams, how to work with virtual teammates, what is hybrid working, all this kind of thing, and what kind of leadership is going to be more effective in the next bit. And we kind of start from the premise that COVID has exposed that an awful lot of what we were doing, whether it was in work or it was in society, has been exposed as being not fit for purpose, not fit for the future, and probably not fit for the past. So I'm an evangelist for change at work, change in society, and changes in the way that leaders lead.
This is great. Yeah. And to that point, that's what we're going to focus on. What leadership looks like in this new world, and communication and persuasion, what does that look like? And so for the listeners, so you have a little roadmap to follow, These are the three things we're going to focus on. Number one, when it comes to working from home, what are the main communication challenges that we face? Number two, how do we cultivate trust and strengthen teamwork among virtual teammates? And then lastly, what kinds of leaders will succeed in this new world of work? So let's start off with number one. So for you, based on your experience and what you've seen, what are the biggest challenges that we face when it comes to communication, when it comes to this virtual world?
Well, they're huge, aren't they? Because humans are basically programmed to communicate face-to-face, eye-to-eye. You know, all the stuff that we do about shadowing each other's body language, about picking up all these nonverbal cues. And they say that around about 70% of trust and sincerity really comes from the verbal signals, sorry, from the visual signals that we get from people. And if we exist in this Zoom world, we take so much of that away, so much of that away. And then for creativity, for building trust, for working together, we really kind of do that best when we're in the same room. And that's not happening now. And I think what I certainly see in the many clients that we work with is that people coped out of necessity in the first 6, 9, even 12 months of lockdown and COVID. But they struggle. I think they struggle now. And we're missing a lot of that face-to-face interaction. Big debate in many parts of the world about, you know, we're going to have this hybrid working. Is it 3 and 2? 3 days in the office, 2 days at home? Is it 2 and 3? That, my man, is not the issue. The issue really is break it down into place. What is the environment in which we will be most effective, that we will maximize our potential? What's the environment? And that may be the home environment, maybe the office environment. The office world that we lived in has been exposed, has been not fit for purpose. So that's the first thing. Reconsider place, reconsider time, and the flexibility, the family time, the time to be healthier that we've had in this lockdown world. What are we going to do about time and what time we spend at work? But then really the most important thing is what is the culture that's most effective? Because we've kind of seen presenteeism should be dead because of what we've been through. Command and control has been pretty well exposed as not being that effective. It's empowerment, the listening leader, the caring leader, the compassionate leader, the delegating leader, the leader that is confident to say, I don't have all the answers. You guys have the answers. So I think we focus on these three things in a big way. Place, time, and culture, and there are really serious issues to be addressed there about what we could change in the way that corporate life takes place in this world. And I think we should do it because, as one of my leaders in lockdown said, what we were doing before, is that really what we were put on this earth to do? That kind of corporate life? You know, so much unproductive work. The presenteeism of Wall Street is worse. That the people who are thought to be contributing best are sometimes the people who are at their desk at the earliest time in the morning and are still at their desk at the latest time of night. That's nonsense. Challenge it. The time now is to reset and to challenge nearly everything that we've been doing in corporate life and create a better way to work.
I agree. I really love that response. And I like how you synthesized it down to these three core elements, the environment, time, and culture. And really challenging people to question whether or not the way that we're doing things is fit for the purpose, to our ultimate goal. Yeah. And what I've recognized in talking to different people and going into different organizations and helping them with conflict resolution, recognizing that last point about culture
is often an underlying factor that's not recognized or fully appreciated. And so sometimes you might have a company culture where presenteeism reigns supreme. And so you need to have that FaceTime with the boss in order to prove to the boss that you are in fact working. And so for those folks who find themselves in those types of situations where the work culture and the environment and the understanding of time hasn't really caught up with the modern conceptualization of what work can and should be, what advice do you have for them when it comes to leading within your organization and potentially creating positive change?
Does your company invest in professional development training? If you believe that your team would benefit from a negotiation workshop, all you need to do is go to our website, fill out the workshop request form, and then we'll set up a time to chat. These workshops are completely customizable, and we've done them all around the country. Negotiation and conflict resolution skills are beneficial across all professions, but they're especially useful in procurement, purchasing, sales, sourcing, and contract management. Our calendar is filling up quickly, and we even have some workshops scheduled for next year. If you think you might want one, I'd suggest reaching out soon so you don't miss out. Check out the link in the description to learn more. And now, back to the show.
If you're interested in the story behind the business headlines, check out Big Technology Podcast, my weekly show that features in-depth interviews with CEOs, researchers, and reformers in business and technology. Hi, I'm Alex Kantrowitz. I'm a longtime journalist, CNBC contributor, and the host of the show. I empty my Rolodex every Wednesday to bring you awesome episodes, so go check out Big Technology Podcast. It's available on all podcast apps. We'd love to have you as a listener.
Hi, I'm Tomer Korn, LinkedIn's Chief Product Officer. On my podcast, Building One, we dive deep into what it takes to build great products. Recently, we had Zach Perret, the CEO of Plaid, and he shared about his struggles building a financial app for consumers and how he was able to turn it all around with a critical pivot. Take a listen.
I personally couldn't resonate as much with the consumer set that we were trying to reach. I just didn't have that level of empathy. When we made the shift to building a B2B product, though, I was building the product that I wanted. My co-founder and I were creating the product that we wanted ourselves, and we had so much empathy for what that product was.
Such a great insight.
You know, in that sense, we got lucky because we were creating a thing for ourselves. And then the people that we were talking to also had the same problems we did. They were fintech developers. We'd been a fintech developer. We'd been trying to build a fintech product for a year. And so we had such deep empathy. We had such a clear ability to...
If you want to hear more of Zach Perret's story and the lessons that follow, listen and subscribe to my podcast, Building One.
Well, my first challenge is that presenteeism, and to a certain extent, command and control, is actually a sign of the leader lacking confidence and being unable to trust their people. And that's the place where we need to start. Sometimes it's the leader's fear of people making mistakes. Maybe we have to be a little bit more accepting of some mistakes. But we need to engender, because what we always saw at the peak of the crisis, when people were very empowered, was that they did remarkable things. They dropped the unproductive work. They focused, and of course they needed the direction of and the genuine leadership of our leaders. But when they worked with empowerment, they did remarkable stuff. And I think that you do see people who, you do see leaders, the leaders that I've been observing and working with fall into two camps. Those who really get that things need to change. And those who I'm afraid are harking to go back to the way that things were, because that's a natural human instinct. And the latter camp, I'm afraid, will eventually be toast, because their competitors, some of them, will be in the former camp and will be doing things very differently and having empowered, innovative, creative teams. And just on the kind of environment, let me tell you a little anecdote of one of the leaders that we worked with in this project was Mark Thompson, who was then the chief executive of the New York Times. And he went into the offices there of Times Square. I think there's normally about 5,000 or 6,000 people in these offices. And on the day he went in, he had to do his Wall Street, he had to do his earnings call. So he had to go to a secure phone in the office to do that. There were only about a dozen people in the office. And Mark has one of these fold-up Brompton bicycles. So he decided to unfold his bicycle and just to cycle around the office space of the New York Times. And when he cycled around it, he said, empty as it was, with, you know, a discarded pullover or jumper, you know, with a potted plant here, a photograph of a family that, you know, had fallen over. It just looked like a very bizarre place, the empty place. And he wondered, why were we bringing these thousands of people into an office to plug themselves in for the day? Like, and he said, like cows in an empty milking parlor. That's what it looked like, an empty milking parlor. And, you know, this was back in May 2020. And he said, it just struck me that this is all wrong and it's not the best environment for people to be creative and happy and empowered. And they were probably at home, you know, being more creative than they were doing these journeys into the center of Manhattan and plugging them in themselves in like cows in that milking parlor.
It's a really interesting anecdote. And for him to realize that, that shows a couple of things. First of all, he's recognizing, hey, people are at home and they're still getting work done. Because what he didn't say is, I see all these empty desks and I'm overwhelmed by anxiety because I don't believe my people are producing. He said, yeah, it's kind of curious that we thought this was the way. And sometimes it takes these extreme circumstances to help us to understand that there is a better or different way of doing things.
And these are light bulb moments, aren't they? And I think so many people have had these light bulb moments during COVID, and we need to hold on to them. And these need to be the burning platforms for change. Of that, I have no doubt.
Absolutely. And I think this is a perfect time for us to segue into that next point, our point number two, which is how do we cultivate trust and strengthen teamwork among virtual team members? And this is really interesting because one of the things that you said earlier was the fact that sometimes leaders struggle to fully embrace this new virtual world of work because they don't trust the people on their team. And so it's not just we have to have trust laterally to the people who are working collaboratively with us on our projects. Our leaders within companies also need to trust their teams. And based on my experience, and I'd be interested to hear your perspective, it seems as though it's more difficult for the leaders to trust their team than the team to trust their leaders in this world. And I'd be interested to see your perspective on that.
Well, there's a couple of things in this for me. You know, people often ask us as executive coaches, how do I build trust, right? And there's a simplicity to building trust. The way that you build trust is that you keep your promises every day and you keep your promises on small things. You know, we have a saying at Black Isle Group, one of the businesses that I work in, that you only reach your big goals through everyday actions. And working a lot with clients, we break those big goals down and work with people. We have a technology called a nudge technology, you know, which works on apps. And it's really taking it right down to what are the three or four things that you're going to do today that's going to help to get to that big goal. So if we were, so I had a swim in the sea just before I came to this podcast tonight. And my example of it is, if I want to swim around the island that's here, I'm not going to swim around the island and back on the first day. So I have to swim 50, and then maybe I have to swim for 3 minutes, and then maybe I have to swim for 5 minutes. And I have to do it again and again and again. I get a regularity and get a habit going, and then I get to my big goal. Well, it's the same. It's the same in the workplace. It's the same with building trust. So building trust, strengthening teamwork, my thing that I am focusing on now with a lot of clients is how do we, what are the everyday actions, the new everyday actions post-COVID that we can take people so that they're taking these small steps towards that goal. And this technology that, we use, it's just an aid. It helps, but it's we spend so much of our lives now on our iPhones and on our apps that it's kind of a modern nudger to get you there. But you know, without trust, we're nothing. As a team, without trust, we're nothing. Whether you know, you see this, and I spend a bit of time in the sports world as well, and we need to trust. And one of the tools that we've been using recently, and I'm interested if this will grab the attention of some of the people who listen to this, is I've been doing a thing called life storytelling to build trust. And life storytelling is literally we take time with our colleagues to tell our colleagues what we've done in our life, what we care about, what our families are doing, what the challenges that we've been through, what are, you know, the deep stuff that we care about in our past. And I believe that by sharing these stories, we build trust, because people then realize that actually, no matter what our gender is, our ethnicity is, our religion is, whatever our background may be, that we're actually trying to triumph against exactly the same challenges, the same struggles in our life. And there's a commonality, you know, there's a family is a great commonality between all of us. You know, I'm lucky enough to work in many places around the world. And you know what? Put the news to one side, and the people that I meet and the people I work with, they're trying to bring up their families good. You know, they're trying to care for their families. They're trying to look after their children. They're trying to educate them. They've got the same challenges. They've got the challenges at work. They've got the challenges of balancing their health with their work, finding equilibrium, finding out what the meaning of all this is, leaving a leg, all this stuff. And I, you know, thoroughly recommend life storytelling as a way of bringing teams together and of building trust.
I think that's a great example. I was looking just on Netflix last night. There's a show called Explained, and they were talking about explaining different scientific things, and they were talking about attraction, human attraction, romantic, sexual attraction, whatever it happens to be. And one of the keys to attraction was reciprocity. And so the reciprocity between people when it comes to storytelling with self-disclosure, reciprocal vulnerability. And so what you just said is really powerful, because we don't necessarily want to attract our coworkers romantically, because that creates different problems. But we want to build that trust and friendship and that feeling of connectedness. And I think that's more difficult to do virtually, but if you're intentional about creating these opportunities for people to share stories bi-directionally, I think it goes a long way for creating trust. And the thing that's interesting, though, is that we're living in a time where people feel busier than ever. And so from your perspective, how can a leader carve out that time for that storytelling without increasing people's level of stress and anxiety because they say, wait, no, I have work to do?
Well, you know, if you're not doing team building, and if, you know, you need to be doing team building, you need to be bringing your team together, and you just build this into the rhythm of what you're doing. You know, I'm not suggesting it's additional activity, but the power of it, the importance of it, because if we don't work as teams, you know, if we go back into the silos, if we don't share information, if we don't share solutions, then we're putting a huge inefficiency into our organizations. So I recommend this thoroughly. And it's about, I mean, you know, I use this phrase unproductive work, at the peak of the pandemic, we all focused on what was absolutely necessary, wasn't it? Absolutely necessary to get through. And a lot of stuff just fell by the wayside. Now, my challenge and some of the people that we're working with, they say, it is revealed there is so much unproductive work that we do, particularly in large corporates. There is masses and masses of time spent doing things which do not actually materially shift us towards our big goal and our outcome. And, you know, if you get rid of a lot of that, boy, what time do you free up in your organization? Time that can be spent on visioning, thinking, taking a breath, caring for your people, spending more time inspiring, motivating people. So, you know, that's the way to go for me.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And now, with this last point, talking about leadership skills, more particularly what types of leaders will succeed in this new world of work, we've touched on this, but I want you to focus on some of those key elements that leaders can take in order to succeed and lead effectively in this new world of work.
Okay. So one of the suggestions we make in the book, Leaders in Lockdown, is that COVID actually exposed that this is the end of the Superman leader. And we did mean the Superman leader. And really that this was a time where that empowering leader that we talked about before, that empowering, caring, listening, compassionate leader came through. So my thing really now is in some of the companies the corporations that we're working with, is to look at the selection of leaders and the development of leaders and the maximizing of the potential of leaders and their teams. So that's one thing in leadership. And another thing in leadership that the crisis accentuated is reminding us that leaders are at all levels. They're not just the people who have leadership in their titles. So we worked with people from a very large care home business. And they had 1,000 residents in their care homes died in the first 100 days of the crisis, including several of the employees. And in that organization, the people, like in many, if not all, care and health organizations through this crisis, the heroes were everywhere. The heroes were from the people who worked in the kitchens, on the receptions, who were the porters or the drivers. You know, there were just so many heroes across the whole place that showed up remarkable leadership. And that's another thing I think that you take from this. It's that encouraging, that nurturing of leadership at every level in organizations. And the answer to what kind of leader will succeed, we looked at probably working with about 100 different groups recently. What do they want to hold on to from the crisis? Well, they want to hold on to agility and pace, but they want to do it in a way that they're not burning everyone out. So what kind of leaders are good at that? They want to give up this unproductive work to bring focus. They want to do things with more care and compassion. Of that, there's no doubt. So it's leaders who can do these things are going to be the leaders who can conquer.
That's great. And for those listeners out here who are trying to become that leader, who are struggling to embody those principles, what would you say is one active step that they can take in the right direction to make that shift?
Get a very good executive coach. And get an executive coach who will not me. It doesn't need to be me, but honestly, you need you need to take space, whether it's with a, it might be with a family member, it might be with a mentor, it might be with some senior wise person who has been through, has walked the path that you're about to walk, or it might be an executive coach. But you know, in the executive coaching that that we work with, the first thing that we're really saying to people is that so much of human life, so much of the understanding of motives and feelings is actually in your subconscious. You know, this is like a big iceberg, and the bit, the conscious bit that pokes out the top that we show to other people, the real meaning in how we perform as humans and how we perform as executives is in that subconscious. And that, you know, there are a few little maxims that we would work with some of our executives on. That is, starting to get under that subconscious is one. Number two is that so much of us is shaped by our past. And understanding our past is pretty well the key to understanding our future. We are defined as leaders by the way that we restrain or express our emotion. And then the final one for me is that there is a rationale behind every human act, but very often it's not what is immediately presenting itself to you. You need to dig a little bit deeper to find out, why did you really do that? Or why did someone else really do that? Or why is the team reacting like that? Why is the board reacting like that? Why is the chairman doing that? You know, why are your colleagues doing this? And a lot of the time, it's not for the reason that's immediately presenting. And it, in that, encapsulated in that, really is the essence of creating the new kind of leader. And many people, you know, many people have been doing this for a very long time, so it's not something that we've just discovered. We just need more leaders to be like that. And when the problems are increasingly complex, which they are, and, you know, we don't, who has the answers to what the new world of work looks like, to what hybrid working looks like? Well, nobody has the answers. So it's got to evolve, and we've got to work it out. But yeah, my one thing is get a really good executive coach.
That's fantastic. Athol, I really appreciate you coming on the show again. And before you go, can you let the listeners know how they can get in touch with you?
Sure. So I chair a leadership development business, which is based in the UK. They do a lot of stuff in the States, and it's called Black Isle Group. And you can get us at blackislegroup.com. I have my own website for conference speaking and coaching, and that's atholduncan.com. And it's A-T-H-O-L-L duncan.com. And then the book is Leaders in Lockdown. And I haven't been able to get to the US for a while, but I'm going to be right back there as soon as I'm allowed, and working with my great American friends and my great American colleagues to try and create a better world of work. And my final little thought on this is, we all need to help each other. That's another thing that has really been emphasized by the crisis. We need to be a community in business, in professions, that doesn't just stick to particular companies, but we all need to help each other across sectors, across companies, across countries, across cities. You know, the human race needs to cooperate, because actually we're kind of trying to do the same thing. We're trying to get to the same place. So let's just help each other a bit more.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, my friend. We really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing what you have to offer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations, you've just joined an elite club. By listening to a full episode, you're now officially on the Negotiate Anything team. So welcome aboard. What most team members do is they subscribe to the podcast because that allows them to automatically get the latest episodes of the show. The best things in life lie on the other side of difficult conversations. Keep learning, keep practicing, and keep getting better. Your relationships will improve, your career will soar, and you'll have the confidence you need to get the most out of these crucial conversations. Again, thank you for joining the team. We're excited to have you, and I will see you in the next episode. I'll catch you later.